Wizard of Whiskey presents Swig and Ramble, the podcast for the modern age. Join our host for all of the shenanigans, featuring Justin Corey, Smoke Show Violet Smith, the vivacious Nicole Woolsey, the ever fabulous Aaron Gore, and their special guests as we journey together with hedonism in our hearts and a drink in our hand. Adult language used. Listener beware. Cheers, darling.
And welcome back, everyone. I am here in sunny California, and one of my illustrious co-hosts just happens to be sitting next to me for one more romp on the podcast. So I'm excited to have Violet with us here in San Diego.
Hey, guys. I'm enjoying myself quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
We also have somebody on the podcast who's joining us today. We tried to talk him out of it, but he insisted. His name is Trey, and he is possibly one of the most, how do I put this? like a god of rock, but for wine. The undisputed king of Walla Walla, Trey. How you doing, brother?
Well, I'm not going to live up to that at all, Justin. So I appreciate that, though. It's very nice of you to say that. I'm awesome. I'm awesome. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to chatting with you guys tonight about all sorts of things.
Sweet. Well, yeah. Well, let's jump right in. Trey, please tell us what is in your glass and then what sour is your mash, man?
Yeah. So, when you reached out to, when you and Holly were doing your other podcast earlier this month and last month, I think I pinged you and said, hey, let's do something with wine, or you pinged me or something. Anyway, I thought it would be fun to send you some older vintages of what we make up here in Washington State. And the main reason I wanted to do that was I don't think our wines get enough of a spotlight on how well they age. And 100%. I feel, yeah, go ahead.
No, 100%. I was just saying.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And so I thought it'd be fun to send you a couple of wines from the 2011 vintage. And I sent you our Reserve Bordeaux blend, which is a Merlot Cab Franc blend, close to 50-50. And I think the 11, what is the 11, Justin? Can you read the back of that?
Let's see. Whoa, that is some very, very small writing.
I know. Yeah. Which one? I think it's 50, 46, and maybe 4.
What are we looking for?
Right.
Yeah, I need, you know what? Here, let me get my readers on.
Here we go, Cab Franc. So it's 46 Cab Franc. And you're right, 54 yeah. Merlot.
Yeah, there we go.
For all the right listeners, we all have glasses. Nobody can read anything.
Aged for 23 months in French oak barrels.
Yeah,
34% new.
Yeah, just a third, one-third new. One-third new oak. Anyway, probably my favorite wine that we make at the winery is the Arquemage. I fell in love with a bottle of 1990 Cheval Blanc back in 2003. It was the spring of 2003. I was with Ronnie Sanders, who owns Vine Street Imports in Philadelphia, who was distributing my wines at the time in New Jersey and also in PA. And we went out to dinner and he opened up a bottle of this 90 Cheval Blanc. And I went back to my winery after that trip and I told my boss, we're going to make a Cab Franc Merlot blend. And that was my old winery. At Basil Cellars. And when Jerry and I started the winery in 2007, I knew that this was going to be one of the wines that we make. And so I sent you one of those. And I also sent 2011, 14 years old now. And I sent you a 2011 Funkadelic, which is a single vineyard Syrah from the Rocks District, which is a pretty well-known area to especially Syrah lovers. But just wine lovers in general, if you know anything about Walla Walla, you've probably heard of the Rocks District. And so the Funkadelic is from there. I think I also sent you a 2015. Is that right? 2015
I
Arkhamage?
So that's what's in my glass. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's going to be Cab Franc dominant. And so starting in 2012, the roles reversed with the Arkhamage, much like Cheval Blanc, because in most vintages, if not all, Cheval is a Cab Franc dominant blend. I can't tell you exactly what the 15 is, but it's probably in that 55, 45 range of Cab Franc to Merlot. And, but the same vineyard sourcing pretty much, I think there's a little Seven Hills in the 11, but, very, very different vintages, very cold vintage, the 2011, and a very, very hot vintage in 2015. So you are going to get to try two very different expressions of Washington State with a little bit of age on them. And I think, I hope that you're going to be pleasantly surprised with both. I'm drinking the 2023 Funkadelic.
Nice.
Which is, this was designed by my friend Dave Place, one of my best friends from Seattle. He's an incredible musician and a great artist. And I wanted that to look like the old vintage, the 1970s and 60s and 70s rock posters, you know, the Grateful Dead, Janis Joplin, Big Brother, all that stuff. And there's big bubble letters that say the Funkadelic Syrah. And the reason it's called the Funkadelic is because it's from a vineyard called the Funk Vineyard, owned by my good friend, Richard Funk. And he owns Savaya Cellars. They're our next door neighbor. And we started buying fruit from him in 09 off the rocks. And that inspired us to buy a vineyard called Stony Vine, which we bought in 2012. We started making the psychedelic. But you are drinking the Funkadelic before we even bought Stony Vine. So these were some of our very first wines off the rocks. That 2011 is probably about one third new French oak. It's one third whole cluster. I started doing on stem inclusion back in 09. Nice. My first real experiment with it. And we've been using ever since. So I use a lot of stems in our Syrah.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. And I did look at the 15. It looks like it's 57 Cab Franc, 43 Merlot.
There we go.
Yeah. Sweet. So what sours your mash, man? What's bugging you today?
What's bugging me today? You know, I called my mom today just to say, hey, and somehow I veered off subject. I think she said something to the effect of, you know, oh, how you guys doing? I was like, oh, well, considering the state of the world right now, I mean, you know, I'm surviving. And then that led to another question and, you know, down the rabbit hole of all that's surrounding us right now, in politics and in, And then, you know, we've got Holly and I've got three daughters we have to think of. And all that stuff weighs heavy on my mind. And, so that's why I'm fortunate to have, wine. I get to go, and we're in the middle of harvest right now. So it's a little easier to take my mind off of things. Being in the truck means I get to listen to whatever music I don't listen to, which is great. That's another thing that takes my mind off of the state of the world. I'm not one to complain that much. So
you're certainly on the wrong podcast then.
my email, Justin, my email went down today. I think I told you guys that.
Oh yeah.
I can't figure out how to open my, import my new, my old mailbox on my iMac into my new one because it says I don't have enough space, even though I have 1.5 terabytes of space that's available. So I got to figure that out at some point, but yeah. What about you?
Well, Violet, what's in your glass and what sour is your mash today?
Well, I have Trey's Arkhamage, the 2015, right? Yeah. And, oh, sorry guys, I'm a little quiet today. But I have the 2015. And I'll try it. That is really good. It's very.
So that was from a very, very hot vintage.
Mm-hmm.
We had after the 2011, go backwards here, was the coldest vintage to date on record in Washington State modern wine growing history, as a full vintage. The growing degree days were more on par for a warm vintage in the Willamette, but nothing close to what, I mean, it was so far under our average growing degree days. And it was the first truly challenging vintage that I had come across. And I started making wine in 2000. So it was 12 vintages before I had something like 2011 hit us. And it required a lot of patience and a waiting game. And we had to pick between, then October came and we had to pick between rain and all these challenging things were going on. But I think we were super successful. But those wines present like they're from a cold vintage. It has terrific acidity. The wines are still very, very vibrant. The colors should be outstanding. This is the wine.
The color is beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then you veer to the 15 vintage, and the 15 was a very hot vintage. Yet 13 was hot, 14 was hotter, and 15 was even hotter than that. And so the challenge there is getting things off the vine before they're overripe, because that doesn't really fit into our house style, which I feel is more, especially today, now more than ever. We make very elegant wines, wines that are meant to age, but also present really well on the front end. Like you can drink these wines young, they're great. However, if you have the patience, they are going to be incredible wines with 15, 20, 25 years on them. And that's our winemaking. That's my winemaking goal. And that is what my winemaking team tried to put together for us every year. Keith Johnson is our winemaker. He's been with me since this vintage. This was his very first vintage working for me. And he worked sort of under my just watch more than anything for maybe 3 years. And then by year four, it was like he knew what my program was. And then I think his palate has influenced mine in a lot of ways. He's opened my eyes to a lot of different styles of wine that I'm like, oh, you can get some really cool flavors at 22 bricks, things you're completely missing at 24. You know, you're like, oh, all this fruit. Yeah, but all the cool stuff at like 22, you know. And our winemaking style, if you look at those, my early wines, and then when Keith came on board and when he had a little impact, he certainly hasn't tweaked it upside down, but he has made our wines better. So I feel like our current wines we're making today are even better than what we were making back then. But again, this was 2011 was my 12th vintage, 2015, my 16th vintage. I'm on my 26th vintage right now here in Washington State. So,
I really enjoyed it. And I would ask the listeners for what is souring my mash today. Well, being on this trip, it's as I've said, it's very hard. And I think my only one would be that our sweet co-host Nicole had to leave us behind to go back home. I miss her already. So probably that vacations have to end at some point.
R.I.P. Rest in Provo.
That was, she's going to love that one.
She will love that.
I think she's going to love that. Oh,
I remember when did we go to Hawaii? June? For anniversary. You went to Hawaii for anniversary in June, right? Yeah. You talk about coming back from vacation or having vacations in. Yes, I remember our last day coming back from Hawaii, having to come back home, and you have whatever you want. Wait, the 11? Okay. Oh, okay.
That's the worst.
Yes. Yeah. So.
A tropical vacation. Oh, you never want to leave those.
Right.
What about you? Yeah.
So I finished the 2015 that was in my glass, which was squid ink, that had sort of faded to like a dried rose petal. Just a very floral and berry driven wine, which you typically get, like you said, in hot vintages. Still an amazing wine. I do think it needs a little more time. I wish, you know, I had another bottle so I could, you know, hold on to
we'll
it
do,
for another,
Justin,
another
we'll
10.
Do a, we'll have a 10-year anniversary show.
100%.
From this. Just mark it on your calendar. Go and put it in your calendar now.
Already doing it. I'm sending the Zoom, which if that's the company that's still around then. but yeah. And then I moved on to the 11, which I have to say, it's not often that you see an older wine more robust on the color. Like to his point, cooler vintage. This one, you're right. It's 100% very Cheval Blanc style. And I do love that Walla Walla sort of has taken that Cheval mantle up of just Merlot and Cab Franc driven wines. Minerality, slate, a little bit of earth, some of that loamy, you know, soil in there. Just a really, really great expression of the terroir up there. Yeah, and at 14
this,
years
this
old.
This is, the, yeah, 14 years old. And this is from a combination of, let me get my glass back on, but it's Red Mountain and Ooh. Walla Walla.
Nice.
And let's see if I put, usually I'm pretty good about vineyard stuff on here, but let's see. I did not. I guarantee it's on my website because I've got a really good trade page for all the old vintages and stuff. So you can still find the full page tasting sheets on all the old stuff if you need them.
Sweet, yeah.
But yes, this wine is, I just poured some in my glass, the same vintage of 2011. And this wine is like, it shows a little bit of that. You definitely get a little tobacco note in that, at least I do. And it's quite floral, quite bright, and still very, very youthful. There is like a pull of earthiness into it. I think just from a little bottle age, but showing a little bit of oak, but that's only about one third new French oak. So the Arquemage rarely goes above 40% on our new barrel program. We're just not trying to make like the oakiest, ripest wine from Washington. There's plenty of wineries that do that very successfully. We're trying to make our market a little different way. So,
no, I love this wine, and I have to say, I love the touch of salinity in there that just drives it, sort of drives the earth through for me. And to your point about the oak, I don't get this just over oaked, luscious vanilla tannin bomb where it's actually showing the terroir. And I love those wines. They're old world style, mineral driven, earth driven. So very, very well done on these two. Really excited. So
thank you, brother.
And no, not to offend anyone, but I did pair them both with peanut M&Ms. So
you shared them with who?
We paired them with peanut M&Ms.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and
perfect.
Yeah,
I mean, I've heard they go best for the green ones.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, yellow and blue. So that works out perfectly. And there it is. Perfect. There it is. It's perfect.
Okay. Oh, gosh. That's the only gravity yellow.
I missed
blue one.
I frankly missed the light brown ones. Those are my favorites.
I've always said, eat what you want to eat and drink what you want to drink. Yeah. And if they complement each other, that's awesome. But if they don't, it's okay. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, don't complicate
what's
things.
What's sour your mash, though, Justin?
Well, let's see. What's sour is my mash? I know it's funny. You mentioned the state of the world earlier, Trey, and I've been trying to pay, in one way, I've been trying to pay less attention, and another way, I've been trying to pay more attention because it is a very rough U.S. at the moment. I have family who has, you know, cousins and other family back in the old country of Palestine. Sorry. And
it's a rough one.
And it's a very rough M&M there. And so it's a very rough time for a lot of people. And I live in relative comfort. I'm not going to lie. We're currently in a beautiful 1-acre Airbnb in sunny San Diego. At the time that this gets released, we'll be back home, and I'm sure poor Viola will probably be freezing in the frigid Midwestern temperatures. But
send warmth, please.
Yeah. So I, you know, I like I said, we a lot of us live in relative comfort, and so the idea that we're going to somehow suffer because of what's going on seems silly. But I also work in the real world, and every single day we get hit with some new tariff or some insane, incoherent, jabberish, gibberish, garbage, nonsensical message from some lunatic pedophile. And I'm just wondering, I'm like, is this actually, are we being punked? Is America being punked?
Yeah.
Am I in a bad dream? Have the aliens actually taken over and they wiped our minds and they're just like, let's do a Sim City with all these humans? I think
we're on some kind of really weird sitcom.
Yeah, like
somebody's laughing at us behind a screen.
100%. That's the Truman Show times.
Plenty of people laughing, for sure. Yeah.
Oh my God.
But
I genuinely,
you know what? You know what makes me? It's easier to be angry at one person, or even, you know, like, you know, pick half a dozen of the people that surround that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But what's even more maddening is the fact that there are 120 million people in our own country that to this day, right today, if they were to fucking hold the election again, you would have a third of this nation. They're like, no problem. That's our guy.
Yeah.
And that is what weighs on me more than knowing that Donald Trump is in the White House, because Donald Trump's going to die, the sooner the better. And I don't feel bad about saying that at all. Natural causes, have a whatever it is, an aneurysm. He's going to save the world. You know, no one felt bad when Hitler died. And that's how I feel about this guy.
Yeah.
Truly. That being said, there are all the minions that are behind him that will, they basically learn this, like, they're like, look at this blueprint for success is not the right word, but look at this blueprint to move our messaging forward, because we've tapped into these really terrible feelings with people and made it okay for them to still feel that way. And like, oh, it's okay if I feel this way now. I used to have to bury that. I couldn't say anything bad about a woman. I couldn't say anything bad about, you know, he's just giving you permission to say whatever the fuck you want to say and not just say things. Now he's giving you permission to do whatever you want to do. You know, go and punch somebody's lights out. You have ICE wearing masks, you know, stealing people off the fucking street and making them disappear. It is, man, it is maddening. It's maddening. And I'm not laughing because it's funny. I really not. I'm laughing at the absurdity of our, where we are as a society today. And I think about my family that voted for this person back home in Georgia. I think about friends that I know that voted for not even the person, for this movement. So that this is all okay. And I'm like, I look at those people and I say, what regard do you have for my children, for my three daughters?
Yeah.
I know exactly how you feel about my three daughters now.
Yeah.
And it's very easy for me to just make those people disappear from my life, and they're not going to be in my life anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm not going to go visit these folks at Christmas. I'm not, because and that is so sad to say. And you're like, let bygones be bygones. But no, because even today, it would have been one thing if they would have come back and apologized. You know, like, holy shit. I know he was telling us all, he was going to do all these things and I voted for him, but he really is doing them. And so that's the most maddening thing to me. It's less about that guy in the office, and it's more about he woke something up in people that made them feel this way, and that it's okay to feel this way and to treat people the way they treat people. It's terrible. Terrible.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on a
this is a super uplifting. Speaking of great wines.
So yeah, this for those listening, it's around Thanksgiving time. So in case he has passed and we're in a new Vance, I don't even know, Hitler, era, then hopefully this podcast still comes out, but if it doesn't, whatevs. But anyway, so yeah, speaking of great wines, so I've still got the 11 in my glass.
Yeah.
And it is just minerality.
Did you guys just open that up? Did you guys just open up that tonight, or did you open that up last night?
Yes, yesterday.
Okay. The 11 and the 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So I'm excited. So now I kind of want to move to, I kind of want to move to the 11 Funkadelic. While you tell us all about the history of how you became the king of Walla Walla.
How about I tell you the story about how I moved to Walla Walla and became a winemaker and started my winery. I was living in Seattle. I moved there in 1992. Prior to that, 1988, I graduated high school. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. I graduated high school. I joined the Navy. And I was stationed in Bremerton, Washington, which is a ferry ride across the Puget Sound from Seattle. And I lived for 2 years here in the Pacific Northwest, but I traveled the world. I went to Australia and Kenya and Singapore and Hong Kong and Philippines and Thailand and Hawaii, San Diego, Alaska in 2 years on a ship. It was awesome. But I was living in Seattle and I thought, what a beautiful place this is. But I knew that when I was getting out of the Navy, I was going back home to Georgia. And so I went back to the University of Georgia for college and go Dogs. Was just going to sort of whatever my life was going to happen, was going to happen out there. You know, that was almost the expectation from my parents for sure. But it was also like my expectation. Like I didn't have any, in no way, shape or form, did I think I was going to stay in Washington, because I was 2 years freshly removed from high school and all my friends were back home and having all this fun while I was, I was having fun, but it was still in the Navy. It wasn't the same thing. So I went back home to Georgia and I did miss Seattle and I really loved, I recognized what a beautiful place it was. And that's the same time the music scene is blowing up, early 90s in Seattle. And Pearl Jam made a bus trip through Georgia. They were traveling the country in a bus right after Tin was released. And I saw them play in Athens, Georgia, in April of 92. And after I saw that show, I dropped out of school a couple of weeks later. I packed up my car and I moved to Seattle. And I was not going to miss what was happening up there from the music standpoint. All the bands, I loved them all. Nirvana, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, Screaming Trees, and discovered 1,000 more bands that never got discovered in Seattle that I still love today. But I had intention of going back to school, but I ended up working for Nordstrom, which is a clothing company. And I'd worked retail in high school, and my 2 years at Georgia, I worked retail just to get by, make some cash. And so I went and got a job at Nordstrom that turned into an 8-year career. I started off in sales, I got into management, I got into buying, and I thought, this is a great job. You know, it was a great job, it's a great company. I learned so much from that company. So 1998, my first daughter, my oldest daughter, Kaylee, was born. And that was when I recognized how much I worked. And, you know, I worked weekends, and I, even as a buyer, I was working weekends. I was in the store. It was, you know, I was out the door at 6 and home at 7. So my kid was asleep when I left, and she was in bed when I got home, you know. And it was during this time frame that a friend of mine named Jamie Brown had moved to Walla Walla. Jamie used to own a record store. That's where I used to buy all my vinyl from Jamie, and also used to buy all my Pearl Jam stuff from him, all my bootleg Pearl Jam CDs.
Nice.
And so Jamie moved to Walla Walla, and I went to visit Jamie and my daughter with me. And I thought to myself, wow, this is, I could live in this place. Like, this is what a beautiful town, you know. Jamie's next door neighbor was a guy named Eric Dunham. And Eric was the winemaker and the owner of Dunham Cellars. He and his dad and his stepmom owned Dunham Cellars. Started in 1995. I met Eric in 1998. And on probably my third visit back to Walla Walla, I was at a dinner party that Eric was at, and Eric pulled me aside and he said, "Do you think you could ever live in a town like this?" And I said, like Walla Walla said, I'd move here in a heartbeat if I had a job. And he said, "Well, why don't you come work for me? I'll teach you how to make wine. We're growing our brand, growing the winery. And I think you'd be a great asset for the winery." And so Eric hired me. Didn't know the first thing about winemaking. I knew a little bit about wine. I mean, when I say a little bit, like I knew a little bit about wine. And, but I moved there honestly with the intent of what a beautiful town and what a great place to raise a family. And, that was in 2000. And so I'm so grateful I did. So I worked for Eric for 2 years, and then I was hired by a guy named Greg Basil to start a winery called Basil Cellars. And, I did that for 5 years, but I was still an employee. Wasn't my winery. I had no equity in the company. And in that time frame, I met my business partner, Jerry Solomon, and his wife, Sandy. While I was making wines at Basil, they really liked the wines I was making. And they came to visit Walla Walla. I invited them to come out to Walla Walla. They're from San Diego, but they were living in Sun Valley at the time. And or spending summers up there. And they came to visit me in Walla Walla. And a little bit of that same thing happened that on my first visit. They came to visit this little town in Southeast Washington State and fell in love with it immediately. Beautiful old Main Street, incredible restaurants, world-class wines, beautiful landscape, you know, and you're 4 hours from anything. And they love that. And I had a business plan that I gave Jerry to look over for me. And Jerry got back to me and he said, "Hey, I love your business plan. Not much I would change. And do you have anybody in mind?" And I did not. And so he said, "Well, I'd love to do that with you." Or Sandy and I would love to do that with you. And so that was in 2007. Jerry and I launched Sleight of Hand in 07. It's Sleight of Hand is the name of one of my favorite Pearl Jam songs. So that sort of ties in going back to 1991 when I first heard that album and living in Athens, Georgia, and moved to Seattle. I've been following that band for 35 years now. So we named the winery after a Pearl Jam song. The magic theme was sort of not an afterthought, but it as we named it Sleight of Hand, that was a natural progression. So that's why all the wines have those sort of fun magic names, the Archimage, the Illusionist, Spellbinder, Conjurer, all those fun names. And it also fit our aesthetic or our vibe, which was like, we're going to be very serious about the wines we make. And one of the reasons I love Jerry as a partner is he's as committed, if not more, than I am to making world-class wines. He has incredible wine cellar and a great palate, and has been fortunate to taste some of the greatest wines of the world. I feel like that's another thing. I talked about Keith's influence on the winery, Jerry's palate, having a more worldly palate than I did at the time. And I don't remember when we met, I've been making wine for 4 years. That was it. So, you know, he'd been drinking wine for 25 years. So he had a lot more experience in the world of wine than I did. And so when we decided to do this in 07, that was a lot of the things that he brought to the table for the winery was a more worldly view of what we're doing. So don't be so insular and looking at what are your neighbors in Walla Walla doing. It's if we're making Syrah, where's the best Syrah in the world made? It's made in Côte Rôtie, Cornas, Saint Joseph. I don't know, no disrespect to anybody in Washington or California or anywhere in the world making that grape. You know, for me, like Thierry Allemand is the greatest Syrah producer in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Klopp, awesome. Chave, amazing. All those. Go down to California. I can name a dozen. Allemand, to me, represents the great, that's the epiphany, the height of what that grape can do. So when I got to try those wines for the first time in 06, 07, 08, 09, first of all, when you could buy it, it was only $40 a bottle back then.
Yeah.
No one knew who he was. You know, you could try those wines. And I'm like, what is this guy doing? And, you know, through phone calls and research and emails and whatever it is, you're like, oh, this guy's 100% whole cluster, all native, grows these grapes on a hillside in the middle of nowhere. It's not like Cornas, but it's not like the traditional Cornas. He's like up in some valley, you know. Those are the things that get your mind like fired up and like, okay, what can we do here then, you know? And that thankfully, you know, Jerry was an integral part of that. So, so we started the winery in 07 and focus was always going to be Bordeaux varietals and Rhone varietals, which is still the focus today. We do make a little Riesling. We do make a little Chardonnay, but Bordeaux varietals and Rhone varietals are what drives our brand. So.
No, that's fantastic. And I appreciate that you guys aren't trying to do everything for everybody all the time. The fact that Walla Walla has sort of designed itself almost like a little bit like Grave and Chateauneuf combined, I really appreciate that. It's a very... it's a very interesting place. I've only been once. In fact, it was about 10, 11 years ago. And that's where we met. But
yeah, you definitely overdue for a visit. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was such a great place. Getting a chance to talk about the Milton Freewater District before it was an AVA, you know, before it right. was even, you know, I think they had just submitted the application or something. We were standing on the border and they're like, well, that technically, that those vines are technically on the other side in what was it, Oregon or Idaho or whichever state it was.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's you're right. It's 4 hours from nothing, you know? So, but I do enjoy the place. And if you haven't made it out there, it is a true wine lover's destination. If you really do love wine, you really have to make it out there. That's a great place to stock your cellar with wines that will last a very long time. Yeah. So,
I mean, then the other thing is the Washington, I think an advantage that we have over our neighbors down in Napa, and I love the wine down there. This isn't a knock on the wines. It's very costly to do business in Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. And when you see, your opening price points for Cabernet, just the entry level cab is $80 and everything is, you know, most everything's over $100 now down there. Your market share is dramatically decreased at that point. You know, there's not a lot of people can afford those wines. And so, Washington still to this day, although it's still more expensive to do business up here too. It's that way everywhere in the wine world. But I still feel like, a $25 red table wine from Washington is going to drink really, really well in comparison to the same thing. For you. First of all, I don't think you can even make that in Napa. It's going to be a California Appalachian or, you know, Lodi or where it's a little less expensive to do business from a grape standpoint, just a land standpoint. That's really what it is. But, you know, labor is more expensive in Napa than it is in Lodi and all that stuff. So, I think it's on the one hand, Washington wants to get away from using the word value. Certainly we never want to hear the word cheap, but when you say, oh, our wine provided really good value, that sometimes is what comes in to mind when they're, oh, well, there must be cheap wines. You know, they're inexpensive wines. I just like to talk about the quality of the wine that we make. Where I am more than happy to put the wine that we make. And I don't care what varietal it is. That's not true. I do care. I think we make some of the best Syrahs in the world. I think we make some of the best Cabernet, Merlot, Cap Franc, and Bordeaux blends in the world, hands down. I think the Grenaches that we're making today are getting better and better and better. And as our vines get older, I do feel like vine age is very important with a grape like Grenache more so than with Syrah or with even Bordeaux varietals. I think Grenache, you need to have a little age on those vines before they like really start to shine. But outside of that, like there's a lot of grapes that I'm happy to put toe to toe in a blind tasting, no problem, all day long. And then there's stuff that we make that I'm like, well, the quality level of, you know, this particular grape doesn't even resemble the highest level of what they're doing in Spain or Italy or whatever, you know, name the grape. And those are the ones where I'm like, should we even be making them? You know what I mean? Like that's the way I look at all the stuff that we work with. The reason we have more Riesling planted than anywhere in the world is because we make some of the greatest Rieslings in the world, but no one really recognized that because they focus on the grocery store Riesling that you see from Washington, Chateau Saint Michel at $9. Who's going to take that seriously? Even if it's a good wine, you know what I mean? But there is, you know, go open a bottle of Poet's Leap from Long Shadows. That is world-class Riesling, no matter where it's from, period.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I would put Washington in a category where you really have to be in the know. If you're a wine lover and you actually know what you're talking about and you're saying Napa, 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 then you probably don't know what you're talking about. If you're saying, oh, I have plenty of Napa, I've got some really cool, stuff out of, you know, Lake Garda, and I've also got some great Walla Walla in my cellar, then you probably know what the hell you're talking about. So speaking of great wine, I have in my glass now the 2011, the Funkadelic. I assumed, because you're such a music fan, I had always assumed that it was George Clinton reference.
It's a George Clinton reference in so much as it plays into our music, our love of music at the winery.
That's what I figured. Okay.
So, 2007, when we started Sleight of Hand, we were making wine at a winery called Savaya, my next door neighbor today. Savaya Cellars started in 2000. Rich Funk is the owner, and he planted his first vineyard in 2007 called the Funk Vineyard in the Rocks District. In 2009, his first crop was coming on board and coming online. And he asked Jerry and I if we wanted to make a wine from the rocks. Now, I love the wines from Cayuse. Christoph is an incredible winemaker, but really a wine grower. He describes himself as a vigneron. He's a wine grower and not a winemaker. The wine makes itself for him. And I believe a lot of that. So When Rich offered us wine from the rocks, we were like, or grapes from the rocks. I'm like, absolutely. And because it was our first vintage and working with fruit from that area. And also because Christoph was very, he kept things very close to the chest. He still does today. Doesn't really talk about how he makes wine. He talks about how he grows wine. And so the rest of it's kind of a mystery. But that was the question. So when we brought our first fruit in from 09 from the Funk Vineyard, the question I asked myself was, what would Christoph do? WWCD. What would Christoph do? And I thought, well, Christoph, these wines are very savory and very meaty, very gamey, very old world in style. But with a Washington or with a Walla Walla imprint because of the warm climate, I thought, well, he probably does some stem inclusion. So it was my first time ever using stems. We did 1/3 whole cluster with that vintage de-stemmed the rest on top. And we did not inoculate. So we allowed it to go native. And that wine, right out of the gate, the 09 vintage, and then 10 and 11, same way. Those wines, those ferments smelled like you walked into a salumery.
Mm-hmm.
Like sausage and blood and iodine, and all these savory things, right? Very earthy-based notes. Very little fruit and so much savory stuff. And I was so excited because it was so different from all the other Syrah that we made. And it reminded me of the things that Christoph was doing. And imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. No, is it?
Yeah, right? That's right.
Anyway, something like that. Yeah. That for me to make a wine that would even resemble something that he would make would be, you know, like all day long, right? And so that's when I fell in love with the rocks. The 2011 vintage, as I mentioned, was a very, very cold vintage for Washington. And we probably harvested those grapes from Rich's Vineyard the third or fourth week of October. And normally, that's the first week of September pick. So just to give you an idea, we're talking a full month plus of extra hang time just to get it to where it is today. You've got the back label there. We didn't make much of it. It's probably a little bit of new wood on there, 20% maybe, if any.
Yeah, not much. You're right there.
10% maybe?
Yeah, 33% whole cluster.
Yep.
14 months and 100% neutral French oak.
All neutral. Okay, so no new wood on that.
And honestly, that makes sense because I legit, when I first smelled this, I thought, wow, they took some plums and threw them in some Isla whiskey or just smoked them with peat. In an incredible way. And I love how it fades from that. It fades from that very intense right on the nose at the very first smell within, you know, 5-10 minutes. You get cedar drawer and just this little bit of light tobacco, beautiful dark cherry cassis, just this luscious fruit bomb with just a ton of minerality and earth.
Yes.
And again, at 14 years old, this is a, by the way, we paired this with McDuds. and it is an awesome pairing.
Yeah.
Just brings out the fruit, brings out the minerality, brings out that, like I said, that very loamy, sandy, you know, soil.
And it got quite a bit of savoriness.
Yeah, very much savory, yeah.
Which was interesting to me.
This would be amazing with stuffing because it would, Thanksgiving in a glass, because this would be the perfect savory with savory, mm-hmm. or
Those also go with milk duds.
Those also go with milk duds, or like a pecan pie without whipped cream.
You're not pronouncing that right, Justice. Pecan.
Oh yeah, of course. That's right. I forgot. You're from Georgia. No, right. Exactly. Thank you.
Get right in here.
See, I'm from Tennessee, and we also say pecan, but I.
Pecan. Are you from Tennessee?
I was learned up many years ago.
He said, "Are you from Tennessee?"
Yeah, born and raised in Memphis. A lot of people don't know. Born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee.
One thing you don't know is one of my alt. I fucking love that city so much. I have more friends that I met in the wine business in Memphis than anywhere else in the country, and it's because of the music connection. Yeah. I met all these amazing wine people that were music people that we bonded and connected over. One of my best friends to this day is a guy named Rusty. He used to own a restaurant there called the Napa Cafe. Terrible name, but is what it is. But it's a great, great restaurant. And he bought a lot of Walla Walla wine. He introduced me to so much great music from Memphis. And I have been to every studio. I got to meet the drummer for Big Star, Jody Stevens, who's from Memphis. The Big Star is one of the great bands from Memphis, mid-70s, mostly unknown. REM would not have existed without Big Star, right? Alex Chilton. Jody Stevens runs Ardent Studios. Jody gave us a private tour. Awesome. Stax Records, Sun, Royal. Go down to Muscle Shoals in Alabama. You're only an hour and a half from Muscle Shoals. You know, what a cool spot. That's awesome, Justin. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people don't. But because I hid my accent and sort of adopted more of a mid-Atlantic. A lot of people assume New York. Some people assume Greece, which
you
is
definitely
weird.
Do not have a Memphis accent at
no,
all.
No, I, but, no. But it's funny because when my father and my sister, they were both born in this small town in Arkansas, like 80 miles west of Memphis. And delivered 20 some odd years later, 24, 25 years later, by the same small town doctor. And when they talk to each other on the phone, it sounds like Duck Dynasty. Just like, it is so fucking, because you can tell when they talk to each other, because then they get on, hey, y'all. I'm like, oh, shit, you just talked to dad, didn't you? Damn. You know, so yeah, it is really funny. And then my wife's like, how come you don't have an accent? I'm like, because I don't, just don't.
My husband's
Yeah, you definitely have. Like you lean closer to like Chicago than you do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My husband's from Michigan, so he gets that Michigan accent every once in a while when he calls people, especially, and when people call him, I hear it. It's so fun.
That Southern Canadian, like, oh yeah, we're gonna have some cheese curds, eh?
Oh yeah. Three. Oh, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It's very
everything
funny.
Will be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm just funny. Ohio, so anybody out of the like U.S. kind of thinks I have an accent.
No, of course, yeah.
That, yeah. I just sound American. That's plain and simple.
Yeah, there is a swath of the country where it's like, you know, like New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Colorado. What's the accent in Colorado? There is none. So.
Yeah, no, exactly. There are places where it's just like you clearly, you obviously moved there. And that's, I think that's the issue with like Arizona and New Mexico, where no one actually was born there. You had to have moved there when you were 15 for high school or something, and then you stayed. But I definitely don't think anyone was ever born in New Mexico. Or Arizona. When I moved to Arizona, right before high school, the entire area that we moved to was just orange groves and just fields. And then when I went back many years after high school, they had moved the road to my high school. So they basically moved the high school to make room for like 300,000 new homes. And there was a Costco, and they bulldozed my orange orchards. And,
what neighborhood? Is it like Phoenix, Saskia?
Right around the Peoria, Arizona area.
Oh, Peoria.
So,
I went to spring training down there once.
Oh,
fun.
Yeah. Though that's awesome. Yeah. We lived right across the street from that stadium. Just a really cool place. Got to see a couple of games there. Every now and then you get to see some practice. And it's like, yeah, Cubs would come out or the White Sox would be out or whatever. So I'm going to finish this wine. We're going to have some dinner.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna compare these three wines again in the morning. Violet, you wanna bring us home? She does not want to bring us home.
I don't know. This is a
But
really
yeah,
fun
what do you,
time,
first of all,
though.
what are you making for dinner tonight?
That's a very good question. Last night we had mushroom and veggie risotto with some chicken and a little balsamic vinegar glaze. And tonight we might go and actually explore a little bit of the town. So we'll see
Oh,
what
really?
happens. So
That's
yeah.
awesome. Well, San Diego, what part of San Diego are you in?
We're actually in the La Mesa Spring Valley area.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Last weekend was Ohana Fest, Eddie Vedder's big music festival up in Dana Point,
Nice.
which is I don't know, 30 minutes north of San Diego or something like that. So
Yeah.
if
A
you
lot of
see
stuff
Eddie
going on
out,
down
if you see Eddie out, tell him that Trey says hello.
here. Will do. Will do. 100%. So, well, on behalf of all of us here at Swig and Ramble, thanks so much, Trey. Such a pleasure. We'll hope to talk to you again soon. And hopefully Holly's able to join us for some other Ramble After Dark stuff.
She would love to do it. And if we're going to do this together again, I think we should do it in person.
100%.
So find some time to come out to Walla Walla. And to everyone listening, we'd love to have you guys come out and see us. Sleight of Hand Cellars got a great website. We've got a tasting room in Seattle. We've got a tasting room in Woodinville. And we've got a wine, our winery and tasting rooms in Walla Walla. And if you ever have any questions about Walla Walla in general, please feel free to reach out to me. My emails on my website and probably my cell phone too. So, more importantly, drink Washington wine.
Yeah,
That's the
love it.
story. Drink Washington wine. So,
There it is.
yeah, cheers, buddy.
Words from the wise. Well, cheers. Thank you so much. And all of you out there, have a safe and happy holiday season.
Thanks for joining us. Be sure to follow us on all of the socials, Snapchat, Twitter, TikTok, and more. For more societal fuckery, hedonism, and maybe the occasional shirtless pic. Justin or Aaron's, of course.